This project is supported by funding from the Institute for Diversity and Civic Life, made possible by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation.
For some background, the Dallas Mexican American Historical League, DMAL, is a 501c3 organization dedicated to researching, collecting, and preserving the historical and cultural experiences of Mexican Americans in Dallas from the early 1900s to the present.
Through DMAL, the Emerging Historian Cohort is a contingent of young professionals assembled by DMAL lifetime member Rosemary Hinojosa in order to pass on the legacy of preserving our local history to the next generation of historians.
Nos puso la vida. Dejé todo, mis amigos, mi familia y mi ilusión. Y aunque allá he pasado los mejores años de mi vida, decir esto da tristeza, pero acá estamos mejor. Pero acá estamos mejor. Como extraño.
It is.
Great. Thank you, Victoria. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Angel, and I am a board member of the Dallas Mexican American Historical League. Today's event is part of the Nuestra Oak Cliff exhibit during the Hispanic and Latinx Heritage Month, and will focus on the Mexican-American life in Oak Cliff. We hope that those who live, currently live, have lived, or have a connection to Oak Cliff are able to enjoy the exhibit and the free programming. Tonight, I have the honor to be joined by three phenomenal members of our Dallas community, Giovanni Valderas, Yolanda Alameda, and Juan Contreras. The story of Oak Cliff is not complete without the story of Mexican Americans in Oak Cliff from as early as 1930s to the present day. This history is an important one, so please share widely with your friends and family and ask them to share as well. We would also like to take a moment to recognize our sponsors. Thank you to Methodist Dallas Medical Center, Bank of America, Vecinos Unidos, Dallas Truth Racial Healing and Transformation, the Latino Cultural Center, and the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. These efforts have also been supported by funding from the Institute for Diversity and Civic Life, made possible by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation. As I shared earlier, we are joined today with three wonderful guests that I will now go ahead and introduce. A native of Dallas, Giovanni Valderas is an assistant professor of art at Texas Women's University in Denton. Previously, he was the exhibition manager at the Fort Worth Community Arts Center and assistant gallery director at Kirk Hopper Fine Art. He began his career as the gallery director at Mountain View College. In addition, Valderas served as an appointee by Dallas City Council as a vice chair of the Cultural Affairs Commission. Valderas graduated from the College of Visual Arts and Design at the University of North Texas with a Master's of Fine Arts in Drawing and Painting. He has taught painting and drawing courses at the University of North Texas, Richland, and Mountain View College. He is a former member of the 500 Gallery, one of the oldest co-op galleries in Texas. His work has been featured in the 2013 Texas Biennial New American Paintings Magazine, issue 108 and issue 132. Impossible Geometries, curated by the works of Laren Haynes at Field Projects in New York City, and the 14x48.org's Temporary Billboard Public Art Project. In addition, Valderas received the Moss Chimley Award and a micro grant from the National Sculpture Center in Dallas for his guerrilla site-specific projects. In 2018, Valderas resigned from his reappointment to the City of Dallas Cultural Affairs Commission, having served under Councilman Omar Narvaez to run for Dallas City Council to represent the neighborhood he grew up in. Valderas led a grassroots campaign where he placed a strong second. Next, we have Yolanda Alameda. Yolanda is a lifelong resident of Oak Cliff. She attended Peeler Elementary, Griner Middle School, and graduated from Addison High School. She has over 20 years of experience in arts management, community development, and program delivery. Yolanda served as director of the Museums and Cultural Affairs Department for the City of El Paso, and as assistant director of the Office of Cultural Affairs for the City of Dallas. She now focuses her efforts on health promotion as a certified wellness coach and as a wellness resource consultant for Gruma Corporation and United Health Group. Yolanda holds a BA in psychology and criminal justice from the University of North Texas and a master's in public administration from Rutgers. A lifelong learner, she is currently working on a master's in social work and public health. She served as the District 6 Commissioner on the Arts and Cultural Advisory Commission for the City of Dallas, but resigned to go hyperlocal and focus on her immediate community. She volunteers with the Polk Vernon Neighborhood Association, the West Oak Cliff Coalition, and the Coalition for Neighborhood Self-Determination. Yolanda is very honored to be included among the many neighbors and colleagues working for neighborhood self-determination and disrupting the barriers to equity and inclusion of everyday people in the planning process that directly impact them. Yolanda was recently elected to serve as the Democratic Precinct Chair for her Area 4063 and looks forward to turning Texas blue in 22. In all her endeavors, she is committed to influencing individual and community transformation and to efforts that improve the human condition. And we are also joined by Juan Contreras. Juan Contreras is an operations analyst for Bank of America, who also co-chairs their employee resource group, ERG, in North Texas, Hispanic Latino Organization for Leadership and Advancement, OLA, which helps promote employee growth, engagement, and fosters local partnerships with organizations in the region. After spending over a decade in civic engagement during his free time as a volunteer with the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, Juan knows the importance of being involved in his local community. In 2014, Juan co-founded the Texas Latino Pride, an annual gathering of celebration, becoming a unique space of culture, welcoming the LGBTQIA+, Hispanic Latinx communities, while also raising funds for local agencies. In addition to his community involvement, Juan has co-chaired the National Latinx Institute at Creating Change and continuously advocates for basic human rights for members of the LGBTQIA+ and immigrant communities. Juan studied at El Centro College for Culinary Arts and applies his studies to help his family's taquerias in the Dallas metro area. And so before we begin, I just want to say I'm really excited, even after reading out loud the bios. And I just want to thank every single one of our panelists tonight on behalf of the Dallas Mexican American Historical League for joining us in such an important conversation this evening. So let's go ahead and dive right in, and I will go ahead and stop sharing my screen so the audience can go ahead and see every single one of us. To kick things off and just kind of level set the conversation before we get into the weeds of it all, let's share, help the audience know a little bit more about you, your history. How would you describe your roots?
Well, all right, I'll jump.
Go ahead.
I'll jump in. I would say that my roots are actually border culture. My mom is from South Texas, and my dad was from the border of Mexico. And so, and I was raised with what I like to call a border ethic. That is that people that live on the border are resilient. And, you know, community oriented, just lots of really great, great characteristics that I take away from being raised by a mom from the border. So I'm Tejana. If anybody ever asks me on a pan-Latino level, I like to say that I'm Latina, just so I can kind of, you know, be in solidarity with the pan-Latino community. And, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm from Oak Cliff, so that's it.
I will go next. My name is Giovanni Valderes. Thank you, Jennifer and Damal, for hosting this. It's amazing. I think it's so important and also impactful that we show the contributions to the neighborhood and what we've accomplished. Such a long history here. I am a son of a fierce Latina woman. She's from Central America, Guatemala, and a dad who's Mexican-American, grew up here in Oak Cliff. And for me, I'm also a visual artist, and in addition to being a professor, but I am extremely lucky and blessed that this community helped raise me in a sense. And I think that is what's so special about Oak Cliff. You know, we, our neighbors, our cousins, our aunts and uncles, we take care of each other. And so I think without them, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And I think as a visual artist, I cannot help but absorb the passion and also the conflicts of what's happening in our neighborhoods. And I try to reflect that in my art practice.
And I guess I'm next. Hi, everyone. My name is Juan Contreras. My roots, I would say Mexican. But Mexican Oak Cliffian, born and raised in Oak Cliff, and raised around a lot of antojitos. I was just looking at my desk and I have like tacos and I have tajin. So when my parents migrated here, I guess a conversation to have though, but although Mexican parents, I always felt like my community was here in Oak Cliff since they were always working. So, but for the most part, I love Oak Cliff. So.
Thank you all for sharing. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot to say, right? When asked, what are your roots? It's not just us, it's our ancestors and the legacy they created and what we're continuing to doing, right? So thank you all for sharing. So tonight's conversation, as we all know, it's centered on community involvement. But just kind of want to take a step back before we dive in deeper, because when you look at the definition of community, it can mean a lot of things. Community sometimes is used to refer a group of people within a certain area, so like a neighborhood, or community can also be used to refer a group of people with a common interest. Sometimes it could be as simple as music or an issue, a campaign, etc. So with that in mind, how would each of you describe your community? And you might have more than one.
I will go. Hopefully others will jump in. You know, for me, my sense of community is also a sense of place. It's also identifying what the different sets of responsibilities that our community, endures. So for example, like I come from an immigrant family. And I think we also have to recognize that there are certain obstacles that are placed in front of us that let's say I am now, you know, I'm an American citizen, so I don't necessarily identify with that anymore, but I grew up in that kind of environment. So a really great example of what I'm talking about is like, you know, I would often hear complaints of how, like, let's say our neighbors who've been here for a while would say, you know, I don't get it. You know, most Mexican-American families, they don't want to get involved in the PTA. We try really hard, but I just don't think they recognize the responsibilities, the additional responsibilities that these families have. So most of them are working two jobs, taking care of multiple family members, because most of the time our households are intergenerational. So grandmothers, grandfathers that we're taking care of. And we also got to put our kids, you know, got to feed them and then put them to bed. So there's just a kind of multitude of things that are happening. And so I think for me, you know, this idea of community, it's actually understanding that and then also being empathetic, because because of my experience and me growing up like that, I now have the privilege to kind of assimilate into like this American culture where I can have a decent paying job, and it's because they laid the framework down for me. So I think it's also acknowledging that.
I think that was so eloquent that just, you know, when I think about community, I think that was all really great points that Gio made. And I just think is, you know, it's important is community is how you define it, right? So, or family is how you define it. And so I would just say, you know, I identify, obviously there's so much intersectionality as they say these days, but you know, I identify with the women's movement and women's issues. I identify with my BIPOC community. You know, I identify with my neighborhood. I identify with my family, and I think that's what is most important to me is that it's how we define it and how we derive meaning from it, and then what we do with those choices that we make or where we find ourselves.
And to echo with my colleagues here, I was just actually, I was thinking back to an article that was written by Medium, where they felt that community had a definition problem because traditionally, community would be based on set location and shared values. However, if you shift from a traditional phase and to where it's now, we get to choose our community, right? We get to choose our community, whether it be location-based here in Oak Cliff, whether it be, you know, my community with Texas Latino Pride, which is a group of 10 of us. You get to choose it, who you want to be in your community. And like I chose my colleagues too, so.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to start with that because it's so true what you all shared. Community looks differently to everyone and it feels differently. But yet again, right, I just want to kind of set the stage because many times we all wear multiple hats within those different communities and take on different roles. Sometimes we're taking the lead or serving as a supporter to something. So thank you all for sharing what that means to you. And along those same lines, you know, your bios, I mean, without a doubt, each single one of you is very involved in the community, in your different communities that you're a part of. Why? Why is that important to you to be involved?
I think as the probably the senior of the panel, I'll take that one or I'll start with that. And I think one of the things that I'm very conscious of over the years is that, and we may not all be conscious of it, but that nothing that we do is altruistic, right? Even in the taking action in the community, I must derive something from it, right? And so I'm always really aware of that. I always kind of check myself about what is my takeaway. But I really do want to say this might come from the fact that, so my mom was not somebody who was a volunteer. Actually, when I told her, like, you know, college and older ages that I was, I went in the Peace Corps, right? And I was going to volunteer. And you know, you can imagine a George Lopez moment, like, yeah, eres loco or eres loca, right? What are you going to volunteer for? Not make any money, because it was not really our ethic, right? We go to college to get a degree, to have a better life. So the concept of volunteerism wasn't a part of her vocabulary necessarily, but she would always be the first one to say, let's make tamales and rice and beans and sell plates, right? For somebody's whatever. She was always the first one to say, let's pull our resources, right? So she might have not had volunteerism in her vocabulary, but this spirit of taking care of people was definitely a part of her vernacular. And I think that my participation in community is rooted in that. I have a really strong sense of obligation. It really is obligation, right? To engage, to help people, and to be of service. And so I often think, well, what, you know, what do I derive from that? We can talk about that later, but I really do. It comes from a deep-rooted sense of service and obligation to my community and to people.
Wow, well said, Yolanda. Like, and I don't think Yolanda gets enough credit. She started the whole movement in the early 2000s, and honestly, like, that's where I got my start. That's where, like, for me, I identified, like, I realized how important it was for community involvement, and it was because of the Ice House Cultural Center, something Yolanda started, something that needed to be started in Oak Cliff, because, you know, she had the vision to realize that there needed to be an outlet for young people in Oak Cliff to go to express, to learn different art forms. And I was one of those kids who just showed up. I was looking for a purpose. And I think the most brilliant thing, it comes back to the ABC development thing, right? Like it is recognizing someone's potential, but also giving them value. And what the Ice House Cultural Center did was hire me because I was a volunteer. And that meant the world to me, because I saw that they acknowledged that I had some kind of talent. And so that set the trajectory for me and to become an artist, because I was around a bunch of artists and I saw like the impact that we're making. And I think the lasting legacy of the Ice House is the murals that were accomplished by like Simi and how Yolanda like helped that, right? And along with other individuals as well, but in organizations. But the beautiful thing is like those murals, not only at the Ice House, but also in the Bishop Arts District, those are still there today. And those were painted by kids from the neighborhood. And that's special. Every time I go by those murals, I think about those kids. And, you know, these are, you know, individuals normally who would be written off as like, oh, they're just these punk kids. But I was one of those punk kids, right? So, yeah.
And still is. I'm always the one, me, myself, I love humor. Even during my down toughest times, I turn to humor to help me cope with things. And if I can bring humor to other people and make them laugh, then so be it. But I guess to jump on what Yolanda and Giovanni stated, mine was more shared experience based. I was still very young, introduced to the LULAC Learning Center over here on Edgefield by Griner. And I got to meet a group of kids who were looking for a sponsor. I never done any type of volunteerism like that ever. A friend of mine asked me, hey, these high school kids are looking for a sponsor so they can continue their council or, you know, charter. And I went head in, let's do it. And then I'll just learn as I, you know, watch them do, the, you know, Roberts, that's where I learned Roberts rules and everything. So it was nice. I was learning, although they should have probably learned from me, I was learning from them. So definitely I would say if people always ask me, how'd you get involved? It all started with a group of kids, so.
And I think that just goes to show, it's like, you give us an opportunity and we'll take advantage of it, just like anyone else. I mean, and that's it. The thing I love about Oak Cliff, we come from a hustle mentality. We are from the tamale lady who used to sell tamales at Mountain View College when I used to work there, rolling around her ice chest around the campus. It's just like, we hustle, and you give us that opportunity, we will take advantage of it and flourish.
And I'll add too, we'll do it together, right? It'll be the mom, the dad, the brother, the sisters, or you helping your mom. I mean, it's something that we see in Oak Cliff. It, you know, it's not just the, you know, the businesses with a certain address. We're mobile. We move around a lot. You know, like, we're going to be everywhere because we're, you know, trying to help our family, help our community. Like Yolanda just shared, right? So sometimes a family would help another family get through a hard time, right? So there's a lot of, unity and synergy. So we are gonna add something. I saw y'all unmuted, Gio and Yolanda.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, awesome. All right, now that we kind of got covered, you know, the baseline on community involvement, as we all know, things don't always go as planned when we're trying to get the work done. And so can each of you share some specific ways that you've advocated for change? It could be just one example, but in your example, what have been the success piece of that advocacy you were pushing for? But also, what were the challenges and hurdles that you also faced at the same time?
I think for me, was more of in the sense of participation and collaboration. I think that was my biggest hurdles. I guess when you go into that world, I'd say it's a world, right? It's a community involvement filled with advocates, activists, in whatever capacity they can. Sometimes, even within that space, it's not very welcoming, I would say. At least that was some of my experiences. However, you will meet along the way some very inspiring individuals and caring individuals that no matter what title they hold or how long they've been doing this, they will open their hearts and also their minds to teach you to better yourself. And if it's something that you're wanting to go into, it's a lovely space. It's a labor of love for most. But those, I would say those were the hurdles that I was to identify. I would say it was those for the most part.
Yeah, I can add to that. I think Juan is on point. I think like in my professional and volunteer career, there's always been sort of that guidepost. Like, you know, Gia was sharing our experience at the Ice House, and maybe that was my role, but there were people in my life, in my career, that made that possible, right? So the person who told me it was okay, so that I could tell somebody it's okay. And although I don't work in city government or I don't do, you know, don't have aspirations for public service, I think having people in those positions are so important. And for us to support them, good, bad, or indifferent, like we may not always agree with everything that those folks are doing, but we have to recognize, I think what I've recognized is that those are hard positions to be in. And we have to support those folks so that they create space for us. So I was going to say, I think, you know, some of the successes of the times that Gia referred to was that I worked in city government and I was in a position to impact change, right? I had access to funding, I had access to programming, and that helped. Being in that position was a help. I think, you know, I have to say, obviously the challenge was changing perceptions. I want to go back to supporting folks. It's, you know, somehow it's like, it's really challenging, right? To be the one that's trying to propose a different way, right? And I just think that the challenge is perception. And I think the one great thing that has changed is that we're not willing to put up with bullshit anymore. Just to be quite honest, is that we all have to call it when we see it, right? And I so admire that, especially you guys, you know, the younger generations that really have a level of self-confidence and awareness that we have to call it out when we see it. So I think that was a challenge for me personally as a young professional coming up, was, you know, coming from a more conservative background and not wanting to be the one that rocked the boat. And so, I mean, I think we got to rock the boat, right? You got to rock the boat. You have to change perceptions. And if you can't change perceptions, you just have to keep, we create our own infrastructure, our own paradigms.
Well said, Yoli, well said. I think for me, beautiful moments were during the campaign when I ran for city council. It was from like white progressives to marginalized people who felt like they had a voice and they could contribute. And so for me, it was knocking on doors and it's a challenge. And I think that's some of the heartbreaking moments when I would get off of work and get my walking list and go to the neighborhood. And it's like, man, because it's a lot, because you are absorbing all the frustrations and anger that a community has been left behind. And so here you go, this fresh face, and they're like, well, who the fuck are you? Like, what are you going to do for me? If the rich white guy ain't doing nothing for me, how are you going to do something for me? And so it started having those conversations at the door. And I think one of the most, I think, beautiful moments where I walked up, and it was like a rough neighborhood, and there was a group of, we'll speak some honesty on this. They were a little like, a little rough. And I thought to myself, I could either walk past them and ignore them, because that would be the safest thing to do, or I could go up to them and talk to them. And so I decided on the latter, and the first thing I said was like, hey, what's up, guys? I introduced myself, told them what I was doing. It's like, are y'all planning on voting? And they were like, do we look like we vote? I was like, all right, yeah, I stand corrected, but this is why I'm doing it. But we had a conversation, and that conversation was genuine. And at the end, they thanked me for coming. And these were just, a couple of dudes. Probably like four or five of them. And that's what we need in this community. We need to be talking to our neighbors, no matter how intimidating it may be. But for me, I mean, that was the definition of change. If we can walk into these neighborhoods that have been ignored, we can start to build that trust again.
And a quick plug-in for those watching, any questions you might have, because I personally have a lot of questions, but I want to allow, those watching to come in, because I've been writing down notes. I have follow-up questions to what you all are sharing. So just want to do that quick plug-in. And so y'all have kind of touched on this already, but still want to pose the question. When you're, on the ground doing this work, y'all, said that I'm giving, but I'm also receiving because of my actions. And so what are some valuable lessons that come to your mind as you've, been helping others in the community, and how has that impacted you?
I think I kind of goes back to something Juan said about, there's always going to be somebody there to help you. I think what I've learned over all these years is that we sometimes, or when you're, I went into it, right? The showboat, the army of one, right? I can take care of everything. I can fix everything. But really, obviously, that's not true. And so I think what my takeaway over the years has been that there's strength in the collective, right? And that that you have to trust in the collective. So I bring, even at this stage of the game, I bring a certain skill set and a certain knowledge and a certain passion. And what I bring to the table is different from what Juan brings to the table. And it's different from what Giovanni brings to the table, and even, Jennifer. But then when we sit down and we are able to sort of part and parcel out the work, because it's a big, right? There's lots of ways to address or attack an issue, right? There's policy, there's community, there's, so I over the years is that it's really great to be, when you talk about community, to found a community and a collective of people that are passionate about the same types of issues, but we really take it from a totally different angle. And if you just let go and let people, and don't try to control it, and you just let people, we all work at where we're best. That we actually make a lot more success. And I think the only other thing I'd tell you that I've learned over the years is that you have to nurture yourself as much as you're willing to nurture other people. And then
still working
silence.
On that, Yolanda. I was still working on that. You know, the end piece, it's learning to let go of things and not trying to control. But I guess my struggle is allowing people to do it when they can, moving at their pace and not my pace, right? My pace is like right there and then. And then I get stressed because I'm like, oh, I can do it for you. But then I'm also thinking, if I do it for them, how are they going to feel? You know? But I would say I'm working on that. I admit it, working on it, identifying people's strengths and letting them be creative. But I would say I've met a lot of people, especially with Texas Latino Pride, who, you know, we're all volunteer based. We don't get paid. And a lot of the work takes a lot of time, you know, on top of most of our volunteers work from 9 to 5. From 9 to 5, most of them have to commute an hour back to their homes. And then they have to work on this production. So I'm really grateful for all of my volunteers and all the effort they put into it. Whether small or big, I think everyone has something to contribute. So,
yeah, I think what Yolanda and Juan said is it's so true. You know, I think sometimes, you know, our community does so much that we forget that we have a bandwidth, and we think we can just keep doing and doing. But I think it's because, at least for me, there is something to prove. And I think we find ourselves doing that all the time. Like we are always trying to validate ourselves. And so, but on the flip side of that, it's also important, right? Because our community, at least for me growing up, always being told how we were a detriment to this community. Oh man, Oak Cliff was so great until those Mexicans came. You know, like, and that's a narrative, that's a real narrative, right? But just like A.K. Sandoval Strauss puts in his book in Barrio America, it's just like, no, wait a minute. we created businesses. We bought homes. We put our kids in school in failing school systems. We did all that without city subsidies. And I think that's a moment of empowerment. Like, you know what? We did that without the city's help. And that, for me, I think that's the most bothersome thing that happens. Like, this city chooses its winners and its losers. They put the thumb on the scale. And my thing has always been, even when I was on the Cultural Affairs Commission, if you're going to give a rich organization a lot of money, you better damn well do it into these working class neighborhoods, because they deserve it just as much as they do.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you all. And so I have these two questions that come at opposite ends, just in case, you know, someone watching who might fall on either spectrum. But the first question would be, what advice would you give to someone who has that energy, that ganas to give back to their community, but they are nervous, they don't know how, or they don't even know where to start? What would you tell someone?
Hey, go tell them to talk to Juan and Yolanda. They put them to work.
That's right.
Nurture that ganas, because those ganas don't last forever.
You know, no,
my advice would be, go for it, do it. Meet someone in the community. You can even talk to myself. If there's some interest there, at any capacity. I think like one of the struggles for me was that imposter, what they call imposter syndrome, when you're like, when you're out there doing things and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, why? Like, I don't feel like I deserve or you know, I'm doing this, you know. And because along the way, like I mentioned earlier, you will meet individual, especially like they call it old guard, right? They don't not want to let go of what they built. And it may have started as something genuine. And as time goes by, unfortunately, sometimes that shifts to some other type of value or moral value, not sure. But if they feel threatened, they will do anything in their power to kind of shift you away from that. So yeah, so just, oh.
That's a good point. That's a good point. There's always somebody, I mean, there could be always somebody, right, that wants to wish you ill. I'm going to borrow a line from Paulo Coelho that the universe is conspiring in your favor, just to take the other perspective, is that I think that when you want to do something and the intent or whatever, the desire of your heart is good, I think that the universe makes a way for you to make those things. I know that sounds, you know, kind of like pie in the sky, but I really do believe that. And but I would say to one thing, I would say there's a book, it's called Small is Beautiful. It's an ancient old economics book, but the idea is to start small. So, you know, I started big, like I had to get these, like, you know, city jobs or these positions or these accolades. But I don't think that that's where the real work happens, you know, 6 degrees of separation. So to work on a small scale is beautiful. It's the work of the unsung hero, but that's where the work happens. That's where change happens. And that too, something that Giovanni alluded to is this ABC approach, this asset-based approach to community development, which I learned a long time ago when I was in the Peace Corps and in graduate school. But the idea resonates. And now that I'm working on a social work degree, it's the same. It's about, you know, we look at people as, or some schools, we look at folks as problematic, right? Things that need to be fixed, something that needs to be solved. And really that's, you know, if we flipped the paradigm and looked at folks and what they have to offer, what are the strengths of your community? What are the assets that you hold? And how can you galvanize that to help people empower and engage to make their own change? So that's been really important to me over the years, is that what I've learned is that you can't, you know, you can't, we have a variety of community members. Some people don't want to know, they're on a need to know basis. No matter how many times you knock on their door, they're not going to come out to vote or they're not going to come to the meeting. But to me, it's important for them to know, right? To at least have the information so that then they can make a choice. And so, because you do impact change and people do choose to get involved sometimes or choose to be aware. So I think both to the on both sides of your question, right? If that was your question, somebody that maybe is like feeling like, oh, what is it? You know, why am I going to do this again? Oh, this is like, you know, it's this idea that on that respect, it's a community development is a cumulative process, and the benefits accrue over time. So, you know, you might be in a community for a month or 3 months or 6 months or a year or 5 years or 10 years and never think, you know, especially in the beginning, you think you're not seeing it, you're not seeing or you're not deriving, right, the benefits and the payoff that you think is supposed to happen. But it's because it takes time. You know, if we think about how many generations, right, how many generations has it taken us to be where we are? And so it takes time. And so when you feel like giving up, it's just that opportunity, you know, you might take a break or you might, you know, pass it off to Juan or Giovanni and say, look, I'm going to get a shot of tequila. I can't do this today. You can take a break and come back. You know what I mean? So it's a cumulative process where the benefits accrue over time. And some of us may never live to see the fruits of our labor, but that doesn't mean we don't do it.
Well said, well said. Yeah, my only piece of advice is that recognize that we hold power and it's our choice to use it. And the great thing is this, the fear and frustrations that we all carry, we have an opportunity to do something with it instead of letting it fester and create resentment. And the magical thing is, if you're feeling that in the community, I guarantee you there's a bunch of other people feeling that. So if you can harness all that energy, we have some real power and we can flex it.
I like that quote. We have some power, we can flex it. Because when you think of flex, you think of muscles. And it's like, no, we're talking about different flex, like inside. And, you know, another thing too that I wanted to ask is, just in case we have folks' T slogan, yeah. Yeah, we're gonna, don't copyright that deal. So the other question I have, because it happens to me too, it's hard to say no to people, to, you know, things that need your urgent attention. If you are, how do you get those moments of break? We heard some examples of like, oh, just a margarita, tequila. But how does that kind of look like when you're like, okay, I am burned out? What does recharging look like to you?
The burnout, that is very, it does exist. And it's when you have all the ganas and you don't control it. And in between those ganas, there's time for self-care for you as well for others. And I'm sure Yolanda will speak a lot about that. But it was hard for me to learn how to take self-care until I burned out. I burned out and I just stopped everything I was doing. Didn't want to hear anything. Didn't want to take part in any conversation, part in any activities. Nothing, just completely burnt out for 2 years. And it's normal. And it happens with a lot of people, especially a lot of people that start with a lot of ganas and they just don't know how to control it. And they last about a few years and then they kind of fall off and you don't hear from them again. So, but those are the most inspiring people and people that are willing to do the work, so.
Yeah, I think that is definitely real. I face it all the time, but it's about, and I always think like, if I don't have enough to give, that is time to kind of step back, because I'm no benefit to anyone if I'm just trying to, you know, do all things all at once. But I think on the flip side of that, I think it's important for everyone else who's recognizing someone who's burning out is to, you know, empathize with that person and also be there, like, hey, you know what? Let's go do something that's non-related to what we're doing. And so it's being, you know, that support system that's needed. And I feel like that's really important because at least in our culture, you know, this culture of like hyper masculinity, like we're not allowed to like, you know, be, you know, cower down or whatever, but you know, it's important for us to reset. And for me personally, it's going to other cities and looking at art and just stepping away from everything. It's always been my recharge.
I think that was a good point about, I already forgot it. That's my senior citizen status. Just what you said about, you know, having empathy, right, for others and empathy for yourself. Is really important. And I think one of the things, again, I've learned over the years is that I think we have to trust that if you step away from the work, it's not going to die. I mean, the work doesn't stop just because you step away, because you've got Juan, you've got Gio, you've got Ryo Plani, you've Somos Tejas. I think that, you know, we have to trust that the work is going to go on. And if we're not able to, like Gio said, right, if we don't have anything left to give, then it's time to take a step back. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Gio says he lives in a hyper-masculine, right, culture from a maybe from a you know, perspective of culture. But I think the flip side to that, at least like I grew up with a single mom, like I try to be aware of not falling into the martyr syndrome. You know, I don't have to do it all, you know, like if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. The truth is it's not going to get done the way I want it to get done, but it's going to get done. Right. And so I just think that, you know, we don't want to fall into some of those negative stereotypes of maybe our antepasados, right, that we had to endure. We have to suffer in silence. We don't live in that culture anymore. And it wasn't helpful to them, and it's not helpful to us. So I think Gia is right in that not only do we need to reach out to others, but we need to be willing to say, hey, you know what? I'm just having a moment. I'm this much crazy, and I let you know it, and I'm gonna, you know, I'll be back tomorrow. So I'm glad that we live in a, I hope that we live in a kinder time in that respect.
Yeah, so Juan, call me, check up on me.
Exactly. No, and thank you to Victoria Ferrer-Ortiz. That was her question, and it was already being alluded. It was kind of like brewing up in our conversation. So, you know, it was important to talk about it because, yeah, when you have to give a lot, then you run out of energy and you have nothing else to give. And, you know, you might end up doing, you know, saying something or reacting in a way, not from a bad place, but because, you know, you're dealing with something inside that's going unaddressed. So yeah, that's really important of being, because you all pointed it throughout the entire conversation, is that the work we're doing, we might not even see the fruits of it, right? And for reality is our ancestors, they didn't see it, but it's like that snowball effect that we just kind of see the things moving the needle in the right direction. And so, you know, it's just kind of being okay with taking a step back, taking time off of work and things of that nature. And we have a little bit, like 6 minutes left, but I just wanted to hone in on, oh, here we go. Someone has a question. So Violeta Gallardo asked, how do you balance the community and activism with your daily, you know, job, like your professional job? So from the 9 to 5 that Juan, you know, talked about, how do y'all balance that?
Sometimes I get to do it while I'm working. If I'm doing my, if I'm wearing my ERG hat, I get to partner with amazing organizations that we know here locally, you know, such as you guys and other organizations that we get to help out. So I love that part when it's, you know, when I'm within my 9 to 5 hours. After that, if I do have the energy, I'd say, especially right now, because I'm on my crunch time, it's usually as soon as I get home, open up my laptop and see what else I have to do for, you know, whatever project I'm working on. So.
I mean, for me, it's always about scheduling, but the unfortunate thing is just like working class people don't have that luxury of balancing things out. Because when I was running for office, it was after I got off of work, it was knocking on doors. And yeah, it's a lot of work. And you know, and there's, and we see that in the political process, at least. We see why there's always rich people running for office, because they have the time and they have the money and they have the network. And just the hurdles that you have to do to even set up an account to run for office takes a whole day, if not 2 days. And so a normal person can't take off of work to do that. And so, yeah, there is those hurdles, but I think when you have that small like achievement or win, it makes it so much sweeter. And but all our lives, it's always been like that. We've always had to work harder than everyone else. So it's no different. And I wish there was a better answer, but at least for me, that's where I'm at.
I think I would only add, and again, it's at phases in life, right? I think I remember being like a mom of young children, a wife, a professional, and it's hard. It really is hard. You make choices. So I think what I've been able to do over the course of my experience is that a lot of times what I do aligns. my profession aligns with my personal goals. And as much as, and that's worked for me, is like, I work as a wellness consultant, to work from home. The work I do is about serving people related to health. The work I do in the community is about serving other people, serving folks through on a bunch of different platforms. So this may or may not make sense, but when I look at the work that I do, I look at it all as the same work. And somebody might say that's rationalization, but so if I get a break in the middle of my day and I do something related to the community, I do it. And then I manage my time and I manage my projects. And I really, in my mind, justify it as being part of the bigger picture in terms of the work that I do. And that has helped me, especially in the last few years, to be able to manage the different pots. And even, in the community, it's really wonderful. There might be a handful of organizations that I'm working with, but at the end of the day, like I said, I went hyper-local. They're all Oak Cliff. They're all community focused. They're all about reaching people. And so when I'm doing for one group, I'm actually doing for all four groups. And so that has really helped me sort of manage my, it's actually not necessarily manage my time, because my time is still a mess sometimes, but it's a mindset. I've been able to manage how my mind organizes the work I do. And that helps me to be able to get it all done or contribute to the process. That's a great question though, Violeta. And I know people are at different stages in life. And I think it just kind of goes back to you give what you can, what makes sense for you at the moment,
Thank you all. I'm taking this to heart because I could also benefit from y'all's answers. We're already at the almost 7 minute mark, a few seconds away. Just to wrap up, are there any groups or organizations that you would like to share to those watching this now or later?
I took myself off of mute really quick to jump in. Now I want to go first. The West Oak Cliff Coalition, the Coalition for Self-Determination, Dallas Mexican American Historic League, Rio Planning, Somos Tejas. But my most personal and immediate plug would be for the Friends of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. So 1,000 years ago, we started something called the Ice House, which led to the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. After 10 years, we now have a nonprofit to support the growth and development of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. And so that would be my plug. And I would really encourage everybody to contribute to the growth of that organization.
And for me, TexasLatinoPride.org, we have a couple of events.